Go ahead and turn, if you will, over to the book of Leviticus. We'll be looking at a couple of passages there in just a couple minutes. About a month ago, we started on a series looking at the Old Testament priesthood as being a shadow, really, of our priesthood today. As Peter tells us, we are priests, this royal priesthood, and we've seen how that God told us various things about that priesthood by the examples given in the Old Testament. As we think about that, just very quickly, I'd like for us to spend just a minute or so reviewing over a couple of the things that we've looked at thus far. In our first lesson, we talked about how that priesthood was a shadow of things to come. And we saw that as various things were expected of the Old Testament priesthood, they had to be a member of the right family. They were prepared for their work through dedication. They were dressed appropriately. They were teachers of the people. We as well are like that, from the family of Christ, dedicated to the work of Christ, dressed in those garments of purity, ready as well to be teachers of the people. 2 weeks ago, we looked at the relationship between a priest and his God. And we said that just as those Old Testament priests had a relationship with God, or were at least supposed to, so we today are to have this relationship. We're to have total commitment to Him. We're to be people of integrity, as a priest was to be a man of integrity. And as Malachi would tell us, we are to be God's messengers, just as the priest of that age were as well. When we think about, though, the major lesson of the priesthood, certainly we need to understand that it centers not around us, but rather the high priest, Jesus Christ. And as we think about that this morning, I want us to talk about Jesus as our high priest. And as we've done in the previous two lessons, to go back into the Old Testament, to look at the pictures that are given there that are shadows of things to come. And I think by the time we finish our lesson this morning, we'll see that Christ far outshines and exceeds any of the pictures that we find given of that high priest of the Old Testament. As we begin our lesson this morning, let's talk about the high priesthood of Aaron. He was the first, you'll recall, that as the law of Moses was established, one was chosen for that purpose, and that being Aaron. And we understand that Aaron had certain things that were expected of him and certain qualities that both would and would not reflect the coming of the royal priesthood of Jesus Christ. But you'll recall, as we've already noted this morning, that it was a requirement that Aaron be of the lineage of Levi, that of those original sons of Jacob, Aaron was to come from the tribe of Levi. And the writer of Hebrews makes that point to us when he says in chapter 7 and verse 5, "And those descendants of Levi who received the priestly office have a commandment in the law to take tithes from the people, that is, from their brothers, though they also are descended from Abraham." We understand that. That he started what would be a long line of high priests, all of them expected to come from this tribe. And as well, we understand that within the law, Aaron was told that his primary duty was to make atonement for the people of Israel. And if you're here in the book of Leviticus, let's look at chapter 16. And as we note here, two or three verses that give us this idea, in chapter 16 of Leviticus, looking down to verse 15, note what's said about the work of Aaron and those high priests who would follow. It says, "Then he shall kill the goat of the sin offering, that is, for the people, and bring its blood inside the veil, and do with its blood as he did with the blood of the bull, sprinkle it over the mercy seat and in front of the mercy seat. Thus he shall make atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the people of Israel, and because of their transgressions, all their sins. And so he shall do for the tent of meeting, which dwells with them in the midst of their uncleanness." Looking on down now to verse 18. "Then he shall go out to the altar, that is, before the Lord, and make atonement for it, and shall take some of the blood of the bull and some of the blood of the goat, and put it on the horns of the altar all around. And he shall sprinkle some of the blood on it with his finger 7 times and cleanse it and consecrate it from the uncleanness of the people of Israel. And when he has made an end of atoning for the holy place and the tent of meeting and the altar, he shall present the live goat. And Aaron shall lay both hands on his head of the live goat and confess over it all the iniquities of the people of Israel and all their transgressions, all their sins. And he shall put them on the head of the goat and send it away into the wilderness by the hand of a man who is in readiness. What do we see? We see the work of the high priest was a bloody job, wasn't it? He was to be offering these sacrifices in order to atone for the sins of the people of Israel. In other words, when the people thought of the high priest, one of the things that should have come to their mind immediately is the fact that he was in charge of making atonement for those sins, whether it be by the sacrifices, the sprinkling of blood, the sending away of the scapegoat. That was his duty. That was his responsibility. But as we consider that work of getting rid of the sins of the people of Israel, making atonement for them, I think something we've got to realize about the high priest of the Old Testament is that Aaron and every high priest who followed him were sinful men. They were not men of perfection. They were not men who could say, "We have never sinned, so we're going to take care of your sins." In fact, here in chapter 16, look at verse 6. Aaron shall offer the bull as a sin offering for himself and shall make atonement for himself and for all his house. Going on down to verse 11. Aaron shall present the bull as a sin offering for himself and shall make atonement for himself and for his house. He shall kill the bull as a sin offering for himself. I believe God's making a point to us, isn't He? He's saying that here stands a man who is like all other men. Though he has been given this position of high priest, though he is to make atonement for the people of Israel, here is a man who has sinned and must first himself take care of that sin. Before then, he can approach God in atonement for others. Well, what does that tell us then about the priesthood, about Aaron and those who followed? These men are mortal. Hey, there is nothing different about them in that sense. Numbers chapter 20, verse 28 tells us about the death of Aaron. Moses stripped Aaron of his garments, put him on Eleazar his son, and Aaron died there on top of the mountain. He was mortal. We know that the other high priests who followed him were mortal as well, as they're describing the cities of refuge in the law of Moses. The one who flees to that city, what's said? For he must remain in his city of refuge until the death of the high priest. Every man who held the position of high priest in the Levitical system died. Every man was mortal. And that tells us a little bit about this priesthood and the fact that it was temporary. Just as everything else in the law of Moses, it was pointing to a conclusion. It was pointing to an end. It was not given as a priesthood for all times. It was given for a limited time and in a limited way. It was a good priesthood because it was given by God. But was it the best priesthood? Absolutely not. Because we understand that it was in some ways giving us a picture and in some ways giving us a contrast of what was to come. And we understand that the whole time God had a better high priesthood in mind. With Aaron and all of the regalia that he wore and all of the responsibilities that he had for atoning for sin, there was one that was coming that would be better. And that's what the writer of Hebrews goes to great lengths to show. As we look over to the book of Hebrews, I want us to note some things in chapter 7. Here the writer, as we very well know, is seeking to convince Jewish Christians, don't go back. Don't exchange Christ for the Levitical high priest. Don't think that Christ is somehow limited and the high priest of Levi is what you need. And he goes to great lengths to say, Christ is better. As we think about the idea of the lineage, one of the points that the writer makes very clearly is that the high priesthood of Christ transcends the lineage of Levi. If you look here in verse 11 of chapter 7, Now, if perfection had been attainable through the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need would there have been for another priest to arise after the order of Melchizedek, rather than the one named after the order of Aaron? Really, what we find is that the high priesthood of Christ is shadowed not so much by the high priesthood of Aaron, but rather by the priesthood of Melchizedek. He's a man that we know very little about. He just kind of walks across the stage in the Bible, not knowing a whole lot about him. We remember when he came out and Abraham was there coming back from battle, and we're told a little bit about him there. Well, the Hebrew writer picks that up and makes points about him. Note the similarities if you look back to verse 1. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, met Abraham from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him. What do we find out? We find out that Melchizedek was not only a priest, but Melchizedek was also a king. King of Salem, the king of peace. And what a shadow that presents of our high priest, who came not only as a high priest, but also as our king, as our king of peace. We look on down to verse 3, and it says, Melchizedek was without father or mother or genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but resembling the Son of God, he continued a priest forever. In other words, he was not dependent on a lineage. It did not matter that he did not come from Levi, because Levi had yet to be born at that point. He transcended that. And because it did not depend on his family line. In fact, I understand that kings of that particular region, where Melchizedek would have been, had a slogan that it is not to our father that we owe our honor. In other words, it didn't depend on their bloodline. Just as with Christ, he came from the order of Melchizedek in the sense that he transcended Levi. Well, one other idea concerning Levi, you might look in verse 9. And the writer says one might even say that Levi himself, who receives tithes, paid tithes through Abraham. All of these passages are saying to us, Christ is better. Christ's high priesthood is greater than that of Aaron. And I think we see that very much in our next point. When we see that while Aaron's priesthood made atonement for Israel, the high priesthood of Christ made atonement for all mankind. Going over to chapter 9, if you look with me down in verse 11, it says, But when Christ appeared as a high priest of the good things that have come, then through the greater and more perfect tent not made with hands, that is, not of this creation, he entered once for all into the holy places, not by means of the blood of goats and calves, but by means of his own blood, thus securing an eternal redemption. For if the blood of goats and bulls and the sprinkling of defiled persons with the ashes of a heifer sanctify for the purification of the flesh, how much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, purify our conscience from dead works to serve the living God? Christ didn't offer the blood of some animal. He offered his own blood. He was priest and he was sacrifice. And it was through that blood that he made atonement, getting rid of sin once and for all, through the sacrifice that he made for all of mankind. And he didn't have to start out by offering a sacrifice for himself. Christ was perfect. He was a sinless man. He walked the earth never sinning. The writer makes that point for us over in chapter 7, verse 26. For it was indeed fitting that we should have a high priest, holy, innocent, unstained, separated from sinners, and exalted above the heavens. That's who we serve. Not a man who was sinful himself, who had to offer sacrifice for himself first, but rather one who was perfect in every way. Because he was no mere mortal. He was no man who has fallen in the grace of God as every man has. Rather, he was immortal. As the writer starts his book talking about Jesus and God saying, Who have I ever called a son besides him? Christ, the Son of God, offered this sacrifice for us. And His high priesthood, not temporary like that of Aaron, not temporary like the law of Moses, but rather a lineage that He will have Himself forever that will never cease. And so the writer of Hebrews took these ideas that we've looked at quickly this morning. And he said, think about what you're doing. What you're doing is you're saying, I want to trade in the very best of everything to something that was put in place only for a temporary time that was never intended to even think about rivaling the high priesthood of Christ. Now, as you and I think about that this morning, why is that important to us? I have a very strong feeling that there is no one in this audience this morning who is grappling with going into Judaism. I don't think I'm talking to anybody this morning who's sitting there thinking, I don't know if I want to continue with Christ. Maybe Judaism is the way I ought to go. So what do we do? Do we just kind of write this off? And do we say, it really has no application to me. These are some nice thoughts. These are some good things. But they're really not that important. Well, while I'm sure none of us are giving any thought of leaving Christianity for Judaism, I'm afraid, though, that sometimes, just like those Christians of the book of Hebrews, we don't take Christ as seriously as we ought to. That was their problem, wasn't it? They were leaving Him. That's the point. Wherever they went otherwise really didn't make any difference. If it had been Judaism, paganism, whatever, they would have been just as lost, because what they were doing is denying, or thinking about denying, who Jesus Christ is. And many times I'm afraid we have that same temptation. Oh, it may not be anything overt. We may not be saying, well, I'm going to make my grand departure and let everybody know. But maybe in the deep recesses of our mind, we just really don't take Him very seriously. That's why this is important to us. Because while we're not Jews or thinking about going into Judaism, we've got to understand who our high priest is. And we've got to understand what He can do for us. We need to understand that in learning about these things, of thinking about the high priesthood of Christ, it shows me how much He cares. I tell you, Hebrews 4 and verse 15 has long been one of my favorite verses of the Bible. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we, yet without sin. That is an amazing verse, because that separates Christ out from any other individual who has ever walked the face of the earth. Contrast that with what the writer tells us in chapter 5. As we look again about the high priesthood of Aaron, every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God, to offer gifts and sacrifices for sin. Verse 2, He can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward, since He Himself is beset with weakness. Here is one who can say, oh, I understand what you're going through, because like us, He's been tempted and He's sinned. That high priest of the tribe of Aaron can say, oh yes, I remember when I fell for that temptation, when I sinned like you sinned. But not Jesus Christ. The high priesthood of Jesus Christ sets Him apart, because He successfully navigated through every temptation that was posed to Him and did it in such a way that He did not succumb. So what does that mean for us? He not only can sympathize with our temptations, and we might say empathize with our temptations, because like we, He was tempted. What this high priest can do, though, is say, This is how you make it through the temptation without sinning. Because he can say that about 100% of the temptations he went through. The high priesthood of Aaron, no high priest could say, well, I've made it through every temptation successfully. Here's what you need to do. With the high priesthood of Jesus, that is absolutely what he says to us. So when I think about that, my knowledge that he has gone through all of this should bolster my confidence in his ability to atone. You see, that high priest under the Levitical system, he had to go back every year making atonement for his own sins and for the sins of others. Christ is the perfect high priest who well understands what we go through, but shows us clearly how we navigate through those temptations. As well, we need to understand that the high priesthood of Christ is important to me, because it offers access to God. You and I, as being Gentiles, might somehow think, well, you know, really, I don't need to understand about all this system of sacrifice and priesthood and all of that. Really makes no difference to me. Yes, it does. Because while it applied specifically to the Jews of the Old Testament, God was painting a picture. And what he was saying is, here is what sin is. Here is what sin does, and you have got to have a bridge back to me. You have got to have one who is offering sacrifice to take care of those sins that you've committed. And so as we look back at these things, we understand that while that is not specifically our ethnic heritage, it is our heritage as mankind. We sin. We need atonement made, and we need someone who can do that for us. So as we study these things, we understand what causes us to have access to God denied. But much more importantly, how that access can be regained. And so following that beautiful passage in Hebrews 4:15, the writer follows and he says, "Let us then draw with confidence, draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need." Boy, that's comforting. Christ knows what we've gone through. He understands our temptations. He knows how to overcome our temptations. And he provides a bridge to the throne of grace, not only for our atonement, but also so that we can find help in time of need. Shouldn't that idea make us rest better at night? Shouldn't that idea be able to put within us the confidence to look at our lives and to say, no matter what the future holds, I can make it? Because I have one who has provided access to the throne of grace. Finally this morning, let me give one other reason why this should be important to us. And that's the fact that this high priesthood is the only choice. It's not the idea of, well, if I don't like this one, there's one other out there that can still get me to heaven. No. It's this or nothing. Several years ago, they were digging, I believe, for a road in Israel. And as often is the case, they hit something old. They were digging and they hit this tomb. And they started pulling things out. And they found this ossuary. And with pretty certain confidence, they said that this was from the tomb of the high priest Caiaphas. Therefore, where was the high priest Caiaphas? He was dead, wasn't he? I look back to the time of Christ's day and I say, here's the high priesthood of Aaron still in, I guess, some kind of perverted form still going on. Can I put my trust there? No. What's happened to every high priest under Judaism? He died. And here are his bones. We can't go there. Well, there's one religion that tells us that they offer a priesthood for us. to get us to God. And they go back to the Latin form of the word pontiff, which means to build a bridge. And in this religion, they say that we have not only provided a bridge back for you, but we have put a man in place on earth who is that bridge to God. What about that? Where is every pope of the Catholic Church other than the one who's currently in power? Dead. Buried. Does that provide the bridge for us? Is he the one who's getting us to God? What soon to become the most populous religion in the world, where is their pontiff? Where is their bridge? You see here the building that houses the tomb of the Prophet Muhammad of Islam. So what have we got? Judaism doesn't offer us any hope, does it? The high priests are dead. Religions of men don't offer us any hope because their bridges die as well. The religion of Islam offers no hope because you can go and visit the tomb of their chief prophet. You see, it's only our high priest who the grave could not hold. You got people all over the Middle East saying, this was the grave of Jesus, this was the tomb of Jesus. Doesn't make any difference where he was buried, does it? Because the tomb could not hold him. And if I say that he is not good enough for me, then I have said I have no hope whatsoever. This high priest offers us access to God. This high priest lets us know that we have a way of salvation. So the question I ask is, do we trust our heavenly high priest? As a kingdom of priests of Christianity, have we put our faith and our loyalty and our trust in him?